You know, speaking of pulling, like you pulling the switch, make sure you pull that wallet out, because somebody on this podcast is owed a bottle of Grand Marnier. Because I accurately said that the Heat would beat the Milwaukee Bucks, and I'm pretty sure I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure I said that I thought it wouldn't even be that difficult. Like I didn't think it would go seven games. Now you got me energy stoked there. I'm thinking about that now. You never know. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens on location here with my good friend and staunch Boston Celtics fan, Coach Whit LeJure. Coach Whit, how are you?
I'm well. Maybe a step slow today after a great night out with the missus, enjoying some food in the local area, and then a new, you know, nice little lounge spot, the Barking Chicken. Could be a potential pod sponsor, the Barking Chicken, featuring some good live music as well. But feeling it somewhat today. Staunch Boston Celtics fan, sure, over the years, but as you know, if I'm coming clean, you know, I've taken my fair share of shots at them and have said time and time again they make it harder than it has to be, which proved out in the Hawks series.
Well, I mean, let's start there, because this pod's going to be essentially a round one recap, looking forward to round two. A team like Boston, when you're playing a team like Atlanta that has a lot of individual good pieces on it, but is not the greatest team, and your gift is supposed to be that you have this team that have been playing together, the nucleus of it, they've been playing together for several years now, that have grown up together, that have been galvanized by the fact that you are, you know, you've been to the NBA finals. It's just not a good look to struggle with Atlanta. Like, it's just not a good look to struggle with Atlanta to allow this series to go much longer than it needed, than it should have probably gone. Like you said, and like we said prior to the beginning of round one, just one of the things that we were looking for from Boston to see if they would make it harder than it had to be, and clearly they did that.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. You know, I was kind of laughing at some post-game six analysis where, you know, obviously everyone was critical of game five, but game six, you know, a lot of what I saw was, hey, they really matured and played great down the stretch and, you know, took care of business, yada, yada. And to my eye, you know, and not to dismiss it, but all they did is made a couple shots. Like, there was a stretch late in that game. Both teams were cold. And I think if Atlanta had made some of the shots they made kind of throughout the series, if you will, Boston was facing game seven back in Boston, but Atlanta missed. One of them was a deep Trae Young three, but that, I mean, they missed a lot. Both teams missed a lot of shots. And then next thing you know, Brown makes a corner three, which is a big one. Tatum goes put back slam. There's another shot thrown. So they won the game because they made a couple shots and Atlanta didn't. I don't think they won the game because they showed some incredible resolve, because even that game to me went longer than it should have if, in fact, you're the far superior team, which is what people make them out to be. I'm not as sure about that either.
Yeah, and I think we have to be careful with the whole they've matured. Maturity and resolve is not on a game-to-game basis. Like, and I think that's a lot of what we hear. Like, if they had matured so much, then game five doesn't look like game five. Like, if that's what we're talking about, if we're saying that they've matured so much, if they've gained so much, like, you don't gain that on a, at least in my opinion, I don't want to speak as if it's law, but in my opinion, like, you don't do that type of thing. That it's not like the game five wasn't winnable. This isn't a situation of game five for the Lakers, where that game just kind of got away from them, you know, and maybe the veterans just went, hey, listen, let's shut it down. Let's regroup for game six. They had a chance to close it out in game five and they didn't. And putting another game on your legs, especially when your two best players are high volume shooters, you know, when your two best players get 30, everybody goes, oh, well, they combined for 60 plus. And I go, well, look at how many shots they took. Like, is it an impressive 60? Like, is it an impressive 60? Is it one of those where, is it one of those where one guy went 12 for 14 or 12 for 16 and the other guy went, you know, 10 for 16, but they both went to the free throw line and just killed them from the free throw line and both got an efficient, like, methodical, killer-like 30, like a Kevin Durant-type 30. That's the guy who I look at who seems to do it better than everybody else does it when it comes to the sneaky, I just stabbed you with 30 points and you didn't even realize how much I was killing you until you looked at the stat book. But those guys aren't like that. Not consistently. They're usually high volume when it comes to that. And I think that takes away from some of the other people around them. And it could come back to bite them here in the next series because, you know, whomever they play in the second round, they're not afraid of – nobody's afraid of Boston. Nobody's looking at Boston and going, oh, I can't beat them.
Well, we know who they play in the second round because they open up with Philly on Monday. So,
well, you know what I'm saying. I was saying, like, whomever they were going to – like, whomever's left.
Got it.
Nobody fears them. Nobody looks at Boston as unbeatable. And that should be a problem when your two best players have been kind of in the fold doing this thing for as long as those two guys have been doing it, where they should be at a level where people should be like, oh man, we got Tatum and Brown. That's a long day. Like, no, they're like, yeah, you know, Tatum and Brown, they're gonna get theirs. Let's take care of the others. We'll come out of this thing with a win. So the Celtics don't take care of business. The Philadelphia 76ers, they do take care of business. Although what I feared and what I continue to fear with Philadelphia, Embiid, how healthy is he? Can he be a factor? Like, the reason I thought they should have swept is because they needed to try to keep Embiid healthy. They couldn't even keep Embiid healthy, or Embiid couldn't keep himself healthy through four games. So now you have a Philadelphia team, you know, going into Boston, and they're not 100%. How do you look at that, you know, at that matchup?
Well, I'll tell you what, just to back up a second, I love the word efficiency that you used, because I think that's a big part, not only of where Tatum and Brown may lack some, but and I think you could throw Smart into there too. I think it's also a way you could describe the team, a lack of efficiency, you know. And then when you look at better teams, maybe I think that is a word you'd say, whether by numbers or just by the eye test, you know, they're efficient. And you use Durant as an example. So now if I look at Philly Boston, I'd say, you know what, that's the same Achilles heel Philly has, you know, like how efficient and how purposeful does, you know, that team play, Embiid, et cetera. Is he getting into the post enough? Is he doing this and doing that? Harden obviously has fought that, critique forever. So I look at two, although very stylistically different teams, a couple of teams that face the same demons in my estimation. So I think it's a long series. Obviously, if I'm going to stay true to what I was kind of pitching on the pod for the last couple of weeks, I'm questioning Boston's ability to get by him, which is somewhat absurd because I think virtually every expert is going to take the Celtics. And my head says the Celtics should win also. I mean, no doubt about it, particularly with the home court advantage. But I'll stick with the fact that they're going to find a way to lose, and that Doc Rivers, Joel Embiid, and the Sixers are going to, you know, find, you know, the trusting the process is going to come around, and they're going to get one. So that's where I'm at with that.
I had Philadelphia as the team to come out of the East this year, right? Yep. When we talked about it in the first round, I had Philadelphia to come out of the East. I don't feel as good about it now because I don't know how healthy Embiid is. This team is just not good. They're not good. James Harden is not that guy. He's never been that guy. Even in his prime, he was not that guy. And it showed up in the playoffs year after year after year. Now he's not even in his prime. He was just in Las Vegas the other day. I'm trying to understand why it is you're in Vegas when you're in the playoff push. Like, that's not the type of time you should be putting on your body. And I know people are like, oh, he should be able to enjoy his life. And I believe that. But, like, you're a millionaire. You can enjoy your life anytime. You don't have to be in Vegas right now. Like, is being in Vegas making you millions of dollars and or getting you ready to face the Celtics? If the answer is no, then you don't need to be in Vegas. I just think it's problematic. I think that, Philadelphia without a healthy Embiid is a team that is wishy-washy. You might get a really good performance out of them. You may not. Obviously, when you saw the last game, game four with Philadelphia against Brooklyn, you saw the difference not having Embiid made. That game was competitive right down to the stretch. And Philadelphia was able to get it done at the end. But, I mean, the Boston's not Brooklyn. And so if that's the team we're getting, if that team, that game four team is what we're getting, then this is an easy Boston. This is an easy Boston walkover, in my opinion. If Embiid is at a level where he can be dominant Embiid, now we have a series. But even then, it's going to be difficult because I don't know if he's going to be 100% Embiid. Now, if he's 100% Embiid, I think that a long series, like you said, and I'll stick with Philadelphia.
Yeah, and Boston's had their number, obviously, which is another thing that the analysts are going to, you know, be all over. But I just think, as we've talked about before, the playoffs are a different animal each round. And each team, you know, I think you can throw the past records out. I mean, and let's face it, some of the results of these playoffs say you got to throw out, you know, past performance a little bit and see who does what. I liked what Giannis said in post-game comments when he said we were playing for the championship and the Heat were playing to beat us. And, you know, and so same old, you know, you gotta make the play that's in front of your nose rather than, you know, the one that's, a couple miles down the road.
Yeah, and you know what? I liked Embiid's pushback at the journalist that was asking him if it was a disappointing year. I like his pushback. I like
Giannis,
the fact that
not Embiid, right? Giannis.
I'm sorry, Giannis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Giannis's pushback. My only issue is I don't think Giannis understands how quickly it's over. Right? Like LeBron is the outlier. Jordan is the outlier. They're not the rule, they're the exception. And so, like, Giannis going down to an 8 seed that had to play into a play-in game in order to get in. Sorry, my guy, that's a disappointment. Like, that's a disappointment. Now, is your entire season a wash? Well, that's really going to come down to how he feels. And I think that if you ask Giannis in an honest moment, not right after a basketball game where he's emotional and, you know, everything, he's going to admit, yo, yeah, we let this one go. Like, we didn't get the job done. And I think that what he doesn't understand is these years are not going to be, they're not going to be kind to him. Like, these teams are getting better. You're kind of in your prime, but your teammates are not. And so, like, as you continue to try to transform and evolve with the times, you know, it's not like Giannis is, it doesn't seem like Giannis is going to be able to add a consistent jump shot to his game. And if he can't add that to his game, if he's just going to be the guy that he is right now, they caught lightning in the bottle that one time. They're not getting back. That's it.
Yeah, he's taken, I mean, obviously the way he plays, he takes a beating. So that any player that has, you know, throughout the course of the NBA, all the players that's played that way have had to reshape their game. Jordan had to get a jump shot, you know, blah, 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 because you just, even with the new, you know, rules and the lack of physicality, the way he plays takes a toll on his body for sure. He's just putting himself in, you know, that's where I read some interesting stuff on eliminating the charge or changing the way charges are allowed in the NBA, which makes some sense because you just got too many high flyers getting undercut. You know, so good for the defensive guys throwing their body in harm's way, but bad for some of the superstars that got to worry about taking hard falls. So I've never, you know, obviously I come down the side of Jesus, that seems extreme, but read a really fascinating article about ways you might really alter the way charges are allowed to be taken.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to be said about that. I'm just going back to the comments about it being like, hey, if you don't get blah, blah, blah at your job, was it a disappointing year? Like, yeah, but I can do my job for 60 years. You can only do your job for anywhere between 10 to 15 years normally if you're a superstar, right? So the clock is ticking. And quite honestly, in Giannis's case, as the star of a team that has already won a championship that they probably should not have won, like when you look at the topography of the league in that particular year, like they caught lightning in a bottle. All right, well, now you've got to hope to catch lightning in a bottle again. And that doesn't always happen. Like some of these teams that get to the finals never get back to the finals. Yep. Like, you know, and so it'll be interesting. Trending up and trending down, the New York Knicks are trending up. They will face the Heat. That should be a fascinating series based off of the history of the Knicks and the Heat. Exactly. The Pat Riley connection, the 90s, the 90s battles back and forth, and
Tom Thibodeau.
I think it's interesting to watch the evolution of Tom Thibodeau as a guy who was really about, hey, let's just grind people into the ground, to now have a team where they have the ability to open it up and put 120, 130 points on a team, but still able to kind of keep grasp on a little of that defensive tenacity. I mean, they beat a Cleveland team who put up points all year. They were one of the top scoring teams in the league. They held one of the best scorers, Donovan Mitchell, in check. Here's what I want to say, because I don't really particularly care about this series. I think that the Knicks are going to win. I don't really care about this series, though, because whoever comes out of this is getting beat. What I care about is, why can't the NFL understand that basketball is the one sport where if you were really good at the level before you got here, you can still be really good at this level? Because Jalen Brunson has been a dog ever since high school. He has always been his size. He's always been a monster. He dominated high school. He dominated college. And then got to the NBA, and the NBA told him he wasn't going to be good because this 19-year-old, 6'7" guy who can't really dribble or shoot but is ultra-athletic, we're going to develop him, and he's going to be better than you. Like, why hasn't the NBA figured out that what you do at a lower level 100% transitions if you give the person the opportunity to do what they did at that other level?
Great question. Don't have an answer for you, but he's definitely turning heads with the way that he's played and now the success of the Knicks in the playoffs.
Is this a different Jalen Brunson? Because this looks like the same dude I've seen for God knows how many years now. Like, this isn't a different dude. This is the same guy.
He's better than he was with the Mavs.
Yeah, Whit, I don't know if you're breaking up or if I'm breaking up. I don't see a little squiggly line that I'm breaking up, so I'm going to assume it's something on your end with your sound. But, like, I agree that he is better than he was with the Mavericks, but I think he's better than he was with the Mavericks because he doesn't have a 6'9", you know, ball hogging point forward out there, you know, dominating possession all the time. So I think that's definitely a thing. But it's just really interesting to me that, like, I haven't seen the NBA get out of its own way when it comes to player evaluation. They're still on this development thing, like, hey, this guy is just not developed yet. And then you see these kids or these young men who are truly developed, who truly understand how to play the game, and they get overlooked because they're 22 or they're 23 or because they're not the requisite height. And then they pick all of these young guys who are supposed to be potentially really good, and they're not potentially, like, they're not as good. They're not as adept. They're not as they're not as savvy. They don't understand the game at the level of some of these guys. And then you give them all of this money and you expect them to be hungry. You expect them to be tenacious. You expect them to be better. And meanwhile, Jalen Brunson's just over here murdering you. Like, I think that's something that we can't, that I just don't know why that's such a blind spot for the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you miss me while I was gone? Did you even know I was gone?
I did. You notice how I just seamlessly kept it rolling? I even acknowledged it. I'm not even going to edit it out the pod either, because I like these parts of it. Like, it was you this time. It was not me. It was not something on my end. It was 100% and totally you. Whereas it's normally something that happened where my thing froze and you kept talking, and I appreciate it.
Love it. Well, I agree with everything you're saying about Jalen Brunson. So,
yeah,
I think the Knicks are a threat too. I think they got that. I think they got a little something going. So, but I agree with you. They'll get this one in a 6 or 7 game series also, but not have enough to get past either Philly or Boston.
Yeah, because the Jimmy Butler thing, the playoff Jimmy, is a real thing. He does not like to stop playing. There's something about him being eliminated that doesn't sit well with him. And because of it, he just plays better. Like, he's just one of those dudes. It's hard. He's a cockroach. It's hard to kill. You know, he's hard to get out of there. He's because you look at his game and you're like, he doesn't shoot well. He doesn't dribble the best. Like how is he able to do this? Why isn't this something in the regular season that we see all the time? But it's just something about when the postseason gets here, that dude turns into one of those guys. He turns into one of those guys who, you know, is just a dominant force in the playoffs.
Yeah, and obviously Spoelstra and the rest of the team just knows exactly what it has to do to kind of get the most out of it. So, I mean, they know, you know, so when he's going off, it's you know, it's not just an individual guy that is doing whatever that individual needs to do to get theirs. It's doing what he needs to do in a way that's good for the Heat to, you know, have a chance to play their best basketball. So it's kind of fascinating. I haven't thought about it, but I can't think of the last guy to kind of do what he's doing, you know, literally put a team on his back.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's done it in multiple places now, right? Like when this isn't like he just started doing this when he got to Miami with Spoelstra. Like he is one of those guys that when like people always use that cliche of do they make their teammate they make their teammates better. But I think in most part, a lot of that is just foolhardy because the person that they're talking about who makes the team better is not actually the person that makes the team better. Usually it's somebody that nobody's talking about, right? Like it's usually another person that's kind of the glue. Like does Steph make other people better, or does the presence of Draymond being able to orchestrate things, is that what makes people better? Is it that they can't leave Clay to help off of, you know, Steph, and so they try to leave? Is that what makes people better? Is it, you know, is everything orbiting around that person, or is he just like a really bright star that has a little gravitational pull to him? Whereas it's clear when Jimmy Butler's in the building, that thing is rotating around him. He like everything is on his orbit. He's the sun and there's planets and stars around him. And so it is fascinating. I don't know why it is. I don't know how it is. I can't point to the last person that was a thing for either. And mostly because for the last, you know, almost 20 years, it's been a LeBron James league. So
I guess you could say it's LeBron-esque. You know, if you looked at what was it, the Cavaliers team, you know, that he won with, right, with not a lot of help. Right. And it was, you know, I mean, kind of, and I think didn't they lose in 7 1 year too? But anyway, yeah, it's LeBron-esque, I would say, for sure.
Absolutely. So like those two games are set. I mean, those two matchups are set in the Eastern Conference. They're going to be good. They're going to be good series on both ends. Like, then you jump over to the Western Conference and the Phoenix Suns, who were able to, you know, get rid of the LA Clippers after a little, you know, a little bumpy road, some bumpy roads in there. And then the Denver Nuggets 4-1-ing Minnesota, who looked hapless out there. Is this Minnesota thing over? Do they just have to blow that thing up? Because I just don't like the construction of this team around a really bright talent like Anthony Edwards. They don't seem to have the same level of get after it determination that Edwards has. Especially the guy who should be either the best player on the team or the second best player on the team, Karl Anthony Towns. Like, they just don't seem to have that same level of urgency. Do you think it's time for them to look at doing some different things with that, with that entire nucleus?
You know what? I'd be lying if I told you I've seen Minnesota enough to make that evaluation, even to have a freaking opinion on it. So I'm not. I just think if you're Minnesota, good luck. Minnesota's always going to have problems. This is just their most recent set of them. I think the concern would be the same one we talked about with Zion, which is to say, yes, it might be time to move on, but can you get commensurate value back? You know, do you need to run it back and see? Is that the best way to go? But mostly the good folks of Minnesota just got to put up with being a, you know, also ran franchise in this league. Who typically are going to lose, you know, every Garnett they get, or, you know, that sort of thing. Something that small market teams have to worry about all the time.
Yeah, but I think if you know, Garnett gave him a lot of good years.
Yeah.
You know, Garnett gave him a lot of good years. Karl Anthony Towns has not given him a lot of good years.
Right.
You know, that's the issue. Cause he should be Anthony Davis-esque, right? When healthy. He should be a guy who has an ability to step out and shoot a jumper, but is really a monster if you can get him with his back to the basket and or face up game, defensive prowess, athleticism to be able to guard, you know, multiple positions on screen and rolls, can athletic enough to let you, you know, try to go by him and meet you at the rim. Like, he should be that. He should be like a Jaren Jackson Jr. He should be like all of those guys, and he's just not, because he's too busy trying to be Steph Curry. And my guy, you ain't Steph. You ain't Steph. You're better than I will ever be at playing basketball. You're better than I ever will be at playing basketball. You're bigger. You know, you're more athletic. You probably shoot better. Like, that's great. But I'm not the barometer. I'm not the barometer. And so, like, just watching him waste this talent and not become what he could become. I understand Jimmy Butler's pain. Like, I understand why Jimmy Butler was so frustrated. Jimmy Butler's from the Shy. You know, understanding how people from the Shy are wired, like, we don't respond to that stuff as well as when you're not getting it off the muscle, to use a colloquialism. That's just not something that you're ever going to be okay with. But, you know, they're out of here, and shout out to Denver, who should have been 4-0, but 4-1, they were able to get it done. And now Denver will face Phoenix. It's an interesting matchup because, like I said before, nobody on Denver plays any defense worth a damn. And the one thing Phoenix can do is score in bunches from a lot of different places. This is a big series. This is a big series for your bigs, right? Can Jokic be dominant? Can he be dominant when it matters versus a team with an athletic big who's able to move with him and cause him some type of trouble when he steps out away from the basket? Like, if he can be dominant, if he can be MVP caliber Jokic, then they give themselves a chance. If he's just a regular, like, stat stuffer, but not dominant, then I think this is a 4-1, 4-2 series.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you've said in the past, and now you're kind of reiterating a different way, that this is the referendum on Jokic. Like, okay, the conversation is going to go one of two ways after this series, in all likelihood. I've got, you know, I've got Phoenix in six. So I think if it goes seven, obviously what we are talking about is a Jokic that lines up with maybe some of his press clippings, and we're talking about, you know, maybe the Suns just finally, you know, hadn't played together enough to get it done or something. I like the Suns in six. I don't think it's too much shorter than that. And we'll see what the Mile High City has to say about that.
Is it a situation where, for as good as Kawhi Leonard is when he's out on the court, we just can't rely on him to be out on the court anymore? Like, does the Clippers, well, him and really, and if you quiet as it's kept, when he was on the court without playoff P, remember I talked about the fact that it could be an addition by subtraction. They looked really formidable with Kawhi unleashed, but he couldn't stay on the court. Is it time for the Clippers to just start thinking about life, or how to put together two different types of teams, like a with Kawhi team and a without Kawhi team?
Well, I mean, that's hard to do. Like, you know, you got to be a pretty astute general manager to pull that off. I'm suggesting, you know, the Celtics should try. And I actually saw glimpses of it a little bit while they were playing, and the idea of, okay, with Tatum and without Tatum, not due to injury, but just, you know, sometimes some of their best surges to me are when he's sitting. So, you know, for different, but they've got the depth to do it. And so, not every team obviously has that kind of depth. The thing I think with Kawhi again is you know, LA is always going to, you know, the Clippers are always going to be the little sisters to the Lakers. And if you're trying, I think they've got a new building, or if they don't, it's, yeah. So they've got to sell. Right. So they've got to sell tickets. So, you know, that I don't think ownership can afford to unload a superstar unless they're getting one in return, which, you know, who's going to do that since he's injury prone. So I'm saying they just got to cross their fingers and, you know, see if once and for all he can get healthy.
See, I'm not even thinking about getting rid of him. I think you just ride him out. I'm saying,
right,
how can we construct a team that runs differently when he's on the court? Because he is so good when he's on the court that you can get it done. But he's a part-time player. He's not a full-time player anymore. So he's going to play 40 games in a season. Let's just book it. 40 games in the season. He's going to play half the season. You know, there's going to be a couple playoff games that he misses. Let's just book it. How do we play as a team when he is no longer a part of the equation? Like, can we put together a team that can function and be successful where he is almost a luxury item as opposed to the center of what they're trying to do? I think it starts with trying to get rid of Paul. I think that's where you gotta deal Paul,
right,
and get something for him that you can bring in pieces that allows that team to function independent of Kawhi.
Hey, look, I love the idea. It's intriguing as hell. You know, I think it, you know, It in some respects, it's what every team tries to do in the NBA with a second unit, right? Sometimes the second unit, because of its makeup, plays a little bit differently than the first unit.
Mm-hmm.
But to think that a you know, a team or an organization can have a superstar who's a part-time player. Now, I don't know. I haven't thought about it, so I'm not sure that's been done. I don't know that it's possible. I don't know that anyone has, you know, won a chip that way. The thing coming to my mind, because I'm a Celtics fan, right, is a, you know, aging Bill Walton on the 86 Celtics, the greatest team ever. Now, that was, you know, Bill Walton at that point in his career was in a different place than Kawhi Leonard is right now. But it's the same idea. You know, boy, do I think you'd have to hit on a lot of players, you know, whether on the draft, free agency. Like, I mean, the Celtics, look at what Derek White is doing, right? You're just going to have to get so right. I mean, they're just trying to, you know, imagine a scenario in which what you're talking about could actually happen. You got to hit on those Derek White moves. Those have to come up just the way it's coming up for Boston right now. Or you just don't have enough resources to do it.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that becomes stop trying to draft these people that need another 2-3 years and start drafting guys who can play right now, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. Go back to the model of when I draft you, I expect you to come in and be able to serve a role right now, as opposed to I'm bad, but I'm going to keep on picking up all of these developmental pieces. And by the time any of them are good, I can't afford to keep them all. So now I got to start trading them off and letting other people get the fruits of the labor. What I call the Jermaine O'Neal phenomenon, right? Like that type of model seemed to start with Jermaine O'Neal. Hey, we're going to stash you on this bench. You're going to get better while you don't play, and we're this and we're that. And then by the time you're ready to actually be like a really good, legitimate ball player for us, we can't pay you and all these other dudes. So now we got to get you out of here. You got to go somewhere else. So I just look at it and I say, like, what can we do in order to prepare for the inevitable? Either we're just going to keep on hoping that Kawhi can somehow be a legitimate factor regularly, or we're going to accept the fact that this is who we've got. And when he's here, it's great. And when he's not, you know what? We got to do it anyway.
I like the conversation. It's kind of interesting. It strikes me that now we're into, you know, you're putting on your GM mode, which you do from time to time. That's probably outside my basic purview. I'm, you know, more talking on the coach view of things. So this is stretching me a little bit. And obviously that's where, like, fantasy sports guys, I mean, they love this stuff and constantly are doing it. So there's people probably more well-versed in, you know, how you might pull off what you're talking about. Good conversation for sure, though.
Yeah, you know what else is a good conversation? I said that if the Lakers got past Memphis, that they had a chance to make a good run, and I stand by that. An impressive six game series win for the Lakers. The last game. A dominant performance. I think what I take away from these series, number one, Memphis is just not mature enough. They're just not mature enough yet. I don't know if they'll get mature enough, right? As constantly constructed. I don't know if they'll get mature enough, but they definitely were not mature enough. And then I really like the fact that in every game for the Lakers, you had the constant of LeBron kind of just being that dude, you know, outside of the 2020 game that he had. Like, he's been the constant. But then you had different people stepping up to really be like the bright light in that one game. Like the 180 game that he had, that he was just a monster. And then Hachimura off the bench with a phenomenal game. The last game of the series where D'Angelo Russell goes off at 30 plus. Like, they've had Austin Reeves, you know, being there in certain spots. They've had different people step up. They've had different people step up, and they've had different people be able to show that they can carry the load at a particular time for a particular amount. And that's great because LeBron is still LeBron, but he is 38 billion years old. So, like, having somebody else be able to step up, I think actually signals that they're ready for a long run.
I agree with you, and said to you pre-broadcast that as much as I didn't bet on it, I was starting to, you know, my gambling self, as opposed to my heady self, my gambling self was starting to look at Boston, LA as a real possibility for a final, although it goes against, again, obviously the picks I've made. So I think LA is a threat to do what you're talking about. I think the key, and I agree with you as far as LeBron, so, you know, he's going to have the 20. He's going to have a big game or two in a series, but he's not going to, you know, go play, you know, 6 out of 7 games at some ridiculous level that he might have done, been able to do years ago.
30-something points, no. You know, 12, 13 rebounds and 8, 9. No, that's not probably happening. Not going to happen.
Right. So I think, and I agree with you as far as the team-based thing, but I think Anthony Davis is the key to them. Anthony Davis being a dominant Anthony Davis, whether, you know, on the defensive end, on the backboard, and then being engaged in the offense and ready to, you know, to be a consistent force that LeBron just can't be expected to do. That to me is how LA rides this thing to the finals.
Yeah, and we don't know who they're going to face yet. We don't know who they're going to face because the Golden State Warriors have their hands full with the Sacramento Kings. Like, the Sacramento Kings wanted people to know that they were not just a high seed for no reason, that they were there and they were ready to compete, to be like one of those ones. And so, like, it's hard for me to go against, you know, a Steph Curry in a game 7. You know, it's hard for me to go against a Steph Curry in a game 7, but I think one of the things that I said on the last pod was a guy like De'Aaron Fox believes he's better than Steph Curry. Like, he thinks he's the best point guard in the NBA, and he's just been waiting for a platform to show it. And guess what? He's been showing it. Like, he's been showing he's every bit as dominant as every other point guard that's a scoring guard that we have in this league. And it's been fun to watch. It's been fun to watch. It's been fun to watch the chess match between two coaches that know each other, like, pretty darn well. Sacramento is essentially constructed the same way that Golden State is constructed. Even down to, you could say that this Sacramento a lot like those early Golden State teams like early Steve Kerr years for Golden State. So, like, it's a fantastic series. I'm looking forward to watching game 7. I don't know which way it's gonna unfold, but I got to stick with Golden State because I thought Golden State would get it done in a really hard-fought series.
I thought the same thing, but I am going to pull the switcheroo. So I'm going to take the Kings, and I'm going to take them, one, because I am a believer in the home court game 7, but more, I'm a believer in De'Aaron Fox and everything that you've been talking about since the beginning, and now watching it more closely with my own eyes. So, I expect the Kings will win. Mike Brown has been there before. you know, so you're not talking about an inexperienced coach in a big game situation or anything like that. So yeah, I like their chances, and you know, Golden State is going to have to look back, as Kerr basically alluded to in his post-game conference the other night, and you know, hey, look it, we had our chance. We had our chance at home, and you know, we didn't do it. And so they may get what happens when you miss an opportunity, right? You don't get a second chance. And I think the Kings advance, and it's a great story in the NBA, and you know, they're going to have a good chance to yeah, they're giving themselves a chance.
What do you think about Draymond Green being off the bench? One game it worked, the next game didn't work. Like where are you on Draymond, and whether or not he should be inserted back into the lineup for game seven?
You know, if it was me and someone who historically has played different lineups periodically for different reasons, I know in this situation, and again, obviously I don't know all the details of what, you know, the Golden State thing. I mean, I know it on the surface. So me, I'm putting him back in the starting lineup. I'm not risking what can happen when you have your guy who might, as you said earlier today, be as responsible for some of your success as any other piece there. I'm not going to have him sitting on the bench clapping his hands. He's going to be on the court at least to get us out of the gate. And then if I liked the dynamic of what happens to our team when he's sitting, okay, maybe I change those rotation, the timing, the substitution pattern just a little bit to kind of mimic that. But there's no way in hell I'm beginning the game, or beginning the second half for that matter, or finishing the game with Draymond Green sitting there. At the end of the day, I want my best on the floor for as long a time as it makes sense to have him on the floor.
Absolutely. I'm so torn, because I do believe that Draymond has such an influential game. Like I do believe that he brings a lot to the table, but you know, he sometimes when he's in that lineup with those other guys, he feels like an offensive liability, you know, and this might not be the game. This might not be the team that you can have a guy who is an offensive liability on the court as much, because everybody for Sacramento can put the ball in the cup. Everybody, even Sabonis. Like, and I don't think it's lost. I don't think it's lost on me that Harrison Barnes, although the stat book doesn't like flash, His value to Sacramento is very similar to his value that he was when he was at Golden State in that lineup, being a guy who has the ability to check a bunch of different dudes at different times, you know, and kind of do a little of the grunt work that these other guys don't want to do. I think the reemergence of Malik Monk being able to be with his running mate again from Kentucky, like I think that's not talked about enough. Like Malik Monk kind of got his mojo back in LA last year, and then went up to Sacramento, gets to play with his homeboy, and he looks like a monster when he comes off the bench. The explosiveness, the shooting, like all of the stuff that you waited for to see consistently that you never saw in Charlotte. You see it now. You see why he was such a high lottery pick coming out of Kentucky. And it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot. But ultimately, a guy like Steph Curry, I'm not ready to say he can't get it done when it matters the most. And so I said it was going to be Golden State. I'm going to stick with Golden State. But I would not be mad if Sacramento came along and got the job done. Like,
yeah,
and then it'll be so much fun to watch Anthony Davis have to deal with Sabonis. Like, that's gonna be fun.
Yeah. So I'm flip flopping for the good of the show, and
yep.
So I'm pulling the switcheroo on it. And I do think Sacramento, the environment in there is gonna be, you know, off the charts. So we'll see if that plays out. Hey, how good would the Lakers be with De'Aaron Fox too, by the way? Put him on the Lakers.
Oh my right? gosh.
It's
still now one I'd of those be,
now
things. I'd be
now the Lakers I say, okay, championship. Like
Yeah. Cause at any point in time he can go, don't worry about it, Bron. I got it.
Yeah. AD, take a rest. LeBron, hey, here.
Chill, AD. I got you. What you don't wanna get in the post today, AD? It's cool.
Right.
All right, don't worry about it. Your back's hurting? Yeah. Cool. Yeah. All right, just go out. Where's exactly. Lonnie Walker at? Put Lonnie Walker back in. You know, we'll get it done. You know, speaking of pulling, like you pulling the switch, make sure you pull that wallet out. Because somebody on this podcast is owed a bottle of Grand Marnier. Because I accurately said that the Heat would beat the Milwaukee Bucks. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure I said that I thought it wouldn't even be that difficult. Like, I didn't think it would go seven games. Like, I could just be projecting, but I think I was pretty bullish about that one.
Yeah, you took them in convincing fashion. You were all over that one. And again, to the loyal listeners that got my back, I just want to say that I did ask him for his mailing address. And you could say, like, well, why don't you have a good friend's address? And he say, because we live in an electronic age where, you know, not everyone has addresses anymore, and I don't have an address book. And no, I don't put things like that in my contact. So I texted Gene, asked for an address. He had other more important business to attend to, didn't get it to me, and then ambushed me at the pre-pod party we had today, and, you know, talked about why, you know, he hasn't seen Drizzly or any other company show up at his door with his rightful bottle of booze. So it is.
Hey, listen, if Drizzly wants to pop up at the door, I'm not mad at him. I'm a patient guy, Witt, so I didn't need it like the day after the win, but I just want the fans to know that a bottle is coming to me from you of the milk of the gods for my accurate prognostication of the Heat. Now, what I'm really
hold that thought, because I think
in
addition to your pick on the Heat, I mean, I think God, I think it's just doubly served by your outrageously good pick of Princeton over Arizona in the NCAAs if we go back. So so you're hot this postseason, and I respect that. You're an astute basketball analyst, and you know, I'm very happy to send you a bottle. And if Drizzly would like to be a sponsor along with the Chicken here in Harrison and Cycle Bar, you know, that would be three good establishments backing us up.
I tell you, if we get a Drizzly sponsorship, it's up out here. these podcasts are going to get real interesting. If we had to pick one location, real quick, one location that it would be fun to do a pod from, what would it be? Or one event, one location, one event. Like, where would it be fun to do a pod from?
First of all, I love the question. It's making me think back to where's the best place to watch a Final Four, which we had a good time with, and some of the listeners did as well. Favorite places to view, not a Final Four, sorry, first round NCAA.
So
anyway, so this one's a little more selfish. This one's for us, not the listeners. But what would be a great spot to do the pod or an event? Let's see here. I'm going to say, you know, I'll tell you one thing. It's not in Maine in May when it's gray and 50. So here is not going to be the answer. Like, we're in the middle of July on a boat on the lake. Okay, maybe. Like, that might be enjoyable.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give you one. You know, if Boston and L.A. make the final and you fly up like you suggested you would, and Drizzly, our new corporate sponsor, gets us tickets to the game, you know, doing a pod at TD Garden, or for that matter, maybe we go to L.A. and we take this thing to L.A., and we do the pod pre-Boston LA. That would be a pretty cool spot to do a pod from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. First off, it would have to be a live pod. It would have to be live. It would have to happen before the game started so that all of our listeners could watch us pontificate on who was going to win and then go and watch the game. Like, that's the only way to do it. Drinks in hand, so that, like, before the pod starts, the aggressiveness versus by the time the pod is over, aggressiveness based off of how many drinks have been consumed in that time. Like, I think it would be gold. And so if they wanna, you know, spring for the suite, let us, you know, set up shop and get this thing done. I would really appreciate it. I think that's a fantastic. I'm not even going to say something because I think you knocked it out of the park with that one. That's exactly what I'm thinking. You know, game one, let's go.
When did you'll know this, because in addition to your acumen for the game of basketball and football and all other sports for that matter, you have an acumen for adult beverages. When did the espresso martini get so big anyway?
Probably about five and eight years ago when Patron, that has the Patron, the coffee Patron, where that wasn't selling. And so they had to try to find a way to repurpose it. I think that's where you saw the espresso martinis and like different things. Cause I think at that point in time, maybe 10 years ago, was when different beverages started introducing their cafe version of their beverage. Yeah. And I think that's where it kind of started at. So I would say around 7 or 8 to 5 years ago, however you want to look at it.
Yeah. So like most things, you know, I'm late to the party. And I might add that, you know, that tequila espresso, that espresso with the tequila in it, or vodka, which I did do last night. My wife and I, this guy locally made a nice handcrafted one. Very, very good. Anyway, that gets two thumbs up from yours truly. But I'm late to it. And I told my wife, when did this become a thing? And again, I miss a lot. So I miss that, but I'm now on the train and I recommend it to the
any quick, of the quick yeah. story about I wanna say let's say about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit long, maybe 11 years ago. I used to go to this bar in Tampa, and the bar was set up. It had a piano player that used to play, and me and a friend of mine used to go up there, and we knew a few of the waitresses, not the waitresses, excuse me, the bartenders, the female bartenders. And, you know, it would be a nice little kind of calm place until around about 12:30, where, you know, some of the more demure patrons would go home, and now it'd be a younger crowd that's really there to more, you know, turn up. And we would take shots of Patron XO, like, just to the face. And it was a fantastic time. Let's just say that people were dancing on the piano, you know, like, and the piano player was so great. Like, he was a great dude. He had this, like, machine that played music while he also played on piano. a lot of those bartenders were really good friends. Really good friends. And we had a fantastic time, but it was there, like, because no, and the reason I say it is because they never worried about the owners being mad about drinking it, because no one ever drank it. So, right. Like, they turned it into a way to actually sell it, where we would get a free one, but the other people who were just around enjoying the shenanigans would jump in, and so they were paying, and that's how they were able to move those bottles. But once they were gone, they didn't buy any more. It was funny. Like, they just wanted to get rid of, like, the couple of cases that they had of it. But for a few weeks, it was a fantastic time.
Good stuff.
No basketball involved in that story, for the record.
That's all right. Hey, well, sometimes we get personal. What?
You know what? That's not true. My friend, and shout out to Jeremy Johnson. My friend, we played basketball together in high school, and you know, he's somebody that I consider still be a really good friend today. He's doing some great things in Tampa with development. So shout out to Jeremy Johnson. We won't tell any more of those stories because he is a happily married man with a couple kids now. So we'll keep the rest of those stories for another day.
Yeah. Smart.
So I'm looking forward. You're looking forward to the second round. As we're recording this, Phoenix and the Nuggets, they will get started tonight. So if you're watching this before tonight at 8:30 Eastern time, then you're catching this kind of in a real time situation. If not, then you probably already know what happened in game one of Phoenix and Denver. But definitely make sure that you stay tuned as we continue to bring you more Zebra Strikes podcasts. We want to have some guests on. We just need to find ways to, like, marry up the times.
Yeah, I got a few lined up too, and I know you do. So we'll do it. But, you know, and if not, there's just more mic time for us. I think the winner of game one, I'm going to go on a limb and say tonight's winner will win the series. I think we're going to know a lot about that series tonight.
Okay. I think we haven't seen the KD takeover yet. I think that's right. The part that's the trump card that Phoenix has that I don't believe Denver has. They have the opportunity for KD to go God mode at any particular time and run off one of those ridiculous stat lines that he has, like 50 points and 13 rebounds and 8 assists and on like 58% shooting from the field and 92% shooting from the free throw line. So, like, he has that ability. To his credit, he hasn't had to use it. He's kind of he's okay with working into the system, which is one of the things I really love about him. Like, he's just a basketball player. And so I agree that the pressure is going to be on whoever doesn't win game one. Right. I don't know if I'll go as far as to say whoever wins game one is going to win the series, because I think I would have to come on if Phoenix didn't win and say, oh, well, you know. But I think the pressure will definitely be on. So
I'm just trying to make a few statements that possibly, you know, send a bottle back my way. That's all.
Hey, listen. Go out on a limb one of these times.
Right. Pick Denver. Right. To win it all, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you pick Denver to win it all, then I gotta send a bottle your way.
Right.
You know. I feel very confident about not having to send a bottle, but ladies and gentlemen, as always, it's a pleasure. Make sure that you go on Spotify. Make sure that you subscribe or you follow the podcast. Make sure that you are following Coach Witt on Twitter at Witt LeJour. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Gene Clemens. Don't just come and look at it. Like, you know, hit the follow buttons. Like, that helps. You know, and if you have any of you have a Drizzly connection, let them know that we are open for business. We wanna be in business with them. And until next time, I am Coach Gene Clemens. That's Coach Witt. You guys stay blessed.